This is The Health Show, a presentation of National Productions.
I cannot do an Alex Trebek impression, so bear with me. This computer question answering system took the country by storm when it won on a popular game show. The question, what is Watson?
Answering questions is a pretty general feature of medicine, from what's the result of this blood test to what's the best drug combination for this cancer.
On today's Health Show, we'll hear how clinical laboratories are converting this computer technology into Dr. Watson.
Then we'll hear from a man who went the extra mile and flew halfway around the world to try and find a cure for his allergies and asthma. Then he walked a few feet, barefoot, in poop. I'm Dr. Nina Sachs.
I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Health Show. It's not that often that a contestant on a TV game show makes the news. It's even less often when it makes news before the program is even taped. But the announcement that a computer was going to be a contestant on Jeopardy actually made a few front pages around the world. The computer's name, of course, was Watson, a question-answering machine of a type that artificial intelligence researchers have struggled with for decades, that can understand questions posed in natural language and answer them. Now that technology is being used in settings a bit more significant than a game show. Here to talk about that is Dr. Rémy Arnaud, a professor at Harvard Medical School. We spoke recently about this advance in computer technology.
Let me start with a word about Jeopardy. So for those who've never seen the show, it's a game show of the question-answer variety, and it's been on the air forever, and I used to watch it as a kid. And the way it works is the host reads a clue from a category, and the contestants have 5 seconds to buzz in with a correct answer, and it's got to be phrased in the form of a question. That's kind of the show's thing. And the thing about Jeopardy is the clues can be about just about anything, and they're often tongue-in-cheek. So a category might be called royalty, and the clue might be, this monarch was born in Mississippi in 1935, thank you very much. And for that, the answer would be, who is Elvis Presley? Because he is the king of rock and roll. So contestants not only have to know an awful lot of information, they also have to get the questions and be quick on their feet in order to be able to answer correctly to win. So, you know, that's not the kind of behavior you really expect from a computer. I mean, think of the PC on your desk at work. It works nothing like that. So the challenge of figuring out how to get a computer to win on Jeopardy is what IBM was interested in. And after a bunch of years and a bunch of millions of dollars, they managed to do it. And that's what was so exciting about Watson. It was a machine that was able to get those human questions and get them right. So the integration of huge amounts of data on the other end, which, of course, Watson had to do, well, you know, Google does that every time you do a search. So at least personally, that wasn't the very exciting part about Watson's accomplishment. What was exciting was that Watson got the questions and understood, and it returned not just a web page, but an answer phrased properly in the form of a question. And that was what was so exciting.
Why has the IBM team targeted medicine?
Well, I think without putting too fine a point on it, it's because in medicine, the questions and answers are life or death. I mean, winning on Jeopardy was a nice proof of principle. The Watson team showed that a computer could be programmed to understand human language posed in a natural form and scour massive amounts of data pretty much instantly to find the right answer. But when you consider the big picture, there are an awful lot of situations other than TV game shows where people have to do just that, and medicine is, of course, one of them. So IBM wants to use Watson to answer questions in medicine because they're important, life or death.
Well, that sounds very general.
Well, you know it is, and at this point it probably should be for two reasons. First, answering questions is a pretty general feature of medicine. Everything from what's the result of this blood test to what's the best drug combination for my patient with this cancer. And of course, for a lot of questions in medicine, you don't need anything as complicated as Watson. But the second reason why it should sound general is it's not quite clear yet, at least from outside of IBM, where exactly IBM and the Watson team feel like they're going to have the greatest impact within medicine. At least that's the conclusion from their public announcements. Now, over the past several months, IBM or people collaborating with them have said Watson is being trained to answer the same kind of questions being asked of medical residents. Suggesting a United States Medical Licensing Exam Board's kind of capability. But they've also talked about putting it to work on cancer care and genome analysis, and their health advisory board is similarly ecumenical. So throw in the kitchen sink and you're done. And in fact, just a few days ago, the business lead on the Watson project announced that they're no longer even looking for new ideas for Dr. Watson. He said their plate is just absolutely full. So for now, you're right. The Watson team is trying out a bunch of specific things, but from the outside, it's too early to make more than general conclusions.
Now, what will Watson mean for lab medicine specifically?
Well, clinical questions are all based on data. And the kind of questions that are most commonly asked in medicine often boil down to what is the pretest probability of my patient having this particular diagnosis? Or what is the sensitivity of this particular test for that diagnosis being true in a patient like mine? What is the specificity? What's the positive and negative predictive value? When you consider that most medical questions translate into those specific sort of mathematical type things, you see where lab medicine comes in, because lab medicine is all about the pretest probabilities, sensitivities, specificities, and positive and negative predictive values of tests for particular diagnoses. Either you're trying to rule them in or you're trying to rule them out. The reason why that's especially important in laboratory medicine is that the biggest single problem, the biggest single source of error, if you will, introduced in laboratory medicine at the hospital is what you call pre-pre and post-post analytical error. And the names are awful, I agree. Pre-pre analytical error just means did the doctor pick the right test? And post-post analytical error is did the doctor interpret those results correctly? And if you add it all up and say, okay, well, where do things go wrong in the hospital when laboratory medicine's involved? It isn't in doing the test. We do the test just fine. It isn't in labeling. It isn't in reporting results. Again, we do those things just fine. It's making sure that the right test was ordered and that it was interpreted the right way. And you pick those tests and you make your interpretations based on these positive predictive values, sensitivities and specificities, and prior pretest probabilities. And again, now going backward up the chain of translation, that's exactly the kind of question that Watson should be very suited to answer. So the short story is, Watson, by being able to answer questions like, which test should I order, and what test does this mean, Watson should be able to impact laboratory medicine directly by attacking those pre-pre and post-post analytical errors.
So do you think Watson will really be taking over for what doctors do?
I think taking over is a strong term. I don't think Watson will take over any more than a calculator took over what mathematicians do. What people do is integrate data, and machines can do that more reliably. That frees us as people to do it in different ways and focus on problems and issues that we didn't have the luxury to before. Instead of wondering or having to guess or looking to the grayest beard in the room to ask, well, you know, to tell you, well, what test should I order? You can have Watson say, you know, in situations like this, the following test gave a positive diagnosis this percentage of the time. This other test gave one a different percentage of the time. What we do with that information is up to us. Watson gives us that information, which was always out there. It's always latent in the data that we collect to the tune of 4.6 billion laboratory test results last year in the U.S. alone. But now we have the luxury of being able to look at hard data and help decide ourselves what to do with it. So Watson's a tool that'll free us up to provide better service. That said, there are obstacles. Watson's results are only going to be as good as the data that goes into it, and that data availability is an issue. It's an issue because most of this country, at least, still does not have its records electronic. Beyond that, even when data is electronic, it's not always made electronic in a form that's conducive for computers, Watson or any other, to really understand. Beyond that, there is an awful lot of data which is of a different kind to what Watson has had to deal with so far on Jeopardy, pretty much anything that's not text, and that includes EKGs, images of various sorts, including anything from radiology, and actually a number of other examples like that. And so putting all of that together and sort of making sure it works will take time and effort. And finally, at the end of the day, how's this actually going to work? Is this going to be something that I speak into my smartphone and Watson will work kind of like Siri? Will it be something that I, as a community doc out in, you know, in the rural part of a state will have access to, or will it be something that only the biggest insurance companies will pay multi-millions of dollars to IBM for to get at tertiary care centers. All of those things are very practical, real-world obstacles for Watson to realize its immense promise in this area.
So, Doctor, it sounds like you see this as part of a larger evolution in medicine.
Exactly, although that's an idea that's been around for a while now, and it's not mine. I think it was Ray Kurzweil, the futurist, who's most famous for this idea of a technological singularity, that basically technology is getting so much faster at such a rate that at some point we will cease to be able to understand its progress. It was him who said that medicine is really becoming an information science. It's the next step, really, in evidence-based practice, which is something that we've been taking more and more seriously in medicine, especially over the last 10 or 20 years, of having machines and systems to help us out with that evidence. And I think that that is something that is happening across medicine. You can see it every day in papers published in medical journals. And I think the outcome is going to be a big win, most importantly because it'll help our patients live healthier and happier lives. And that's why we're in medicine in the first place.
Dr. Rémy Arnaud is a professor at Harvard Medical School. He wrote about the implications of Watson in laboratory medicine in the April 2012 issue of the journal Clinical Chemistry.
Still to come, how far would you go to get relief from allergies and asthma? Don't answer that until you hear the story of what Jasper Lawrence did. That's next on The Health Show.
You can find The Health Show anytime online at healthshow.org. Search the archive and listen to whole programs you may have missed or would like to hear again. Even subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow.
You can start your own Health Show archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for Health Show number 1273.
This is The Health Show. I'm Bob Barrett.
And I'm Dr. Nina Sachs. Jasper Lawrence grew up suffering from allergies and asthma. In the end, his medication was so strong that it left him severely overweight and constantly breathless. He'd reached the point where he had pretty much given up hope of being healthy ever again. Then he discovered the hookworm. That's not a brand name or anything. I'm really talking about hookworms. He set off for Cameroon in West Central Africa to purposely get infected by the parasite and began a smelly and uncomfortable fortnight walking in excrement. Was it worth it? Is he better now, and at what cost? Radio Netherlands' Marnie Chesterton has the poop.
I really remember it for the first time when we moved to Suffern in upstate New York, just outside New York City. And I didn't just develop allergies, I had childhood asthma. And so in the spring and summer, I can remember sitting with my head over a bowl of hot water, trying to breathe in moist air, but also just really violent allergic reactions. I can remember running across a field as a child in Texas when I was probably 9 or 10. And when I got to the other side, my eyes had started to swell up. They actually swelled shut. And the reaction was so extreme that it was painful. The pressure on my eyeballs from the swelling, the mucous membranes surrounding them, was put enormous pressure on the eyes, and I literally had to be led home with my eyes shut.
Over the years, Jasper went through ups and downs with his allergies. The point just over a decade ago was definitely a low.
I was walking around like an old man. Any exertion at all was beyond me for most of the year. I was being hospitalized 2 or 3 times a year and being nebulized and during allergy season, which coincided neatly with asthma season, in order to remain comfortably breathing, I'd have to take up to 50 milligrams of prednisone a day, which does cause obesity and, you know, bone thinning and lipomas and personality disorders. And so, yeah, I mean, in the course of about 18 months, when it was really bad around the turn of the millennium, I gained an enormous amount of weight.
At this point in his life, Jasper lived in America. The turning point for him came on a family trip to visit Jasper's aunt in southwest England. She was taken aback by how bad he looked.
And she's a polite woman. But she couldn't disguise, you know, the look on her face when she saw me. She basically asked why I looked so poorly and so ill and what was going on. Her mind immediately turned to things that were practical that you could do. So she'd seen this documentary with that suggested that infection with hookworm specifically was correlated with much lower incidences of allergy or asthma in third world environments. When I investigated this, I was like, well, why the hell wouldn't I? You've got a microorganism that colonizes about 750 million people, intestinal tract around the world right now. Most of them are unaware they're infected. They're easy to eliminate. They don't mismigrate. They don't cause any disease. The CDC in America says in light infections, it's a disease not worth treating. Their instructions to American doctors is to not treat light infections with hookworm.
These worms are 1 centimeter long when mature, and under the microscope, they take a pretty scary picture. A great black hole of a mouth lined with sharp, pointy teeth. They burrow in through the soles of your feet, journey through various organs, and end up in your intestine, where they use those teeth to latch onto your gut wall. So far, so disgusting, but their presence seems to offer the immune system a target to stop it overreacting to things like pollen and dust and attacking the body unnecessarily.
So I'm like, what have I got to lose except some money? And everyone thinking I'm a lunatic. And if it works, I'm super, super stoked.
So Jasper goes hunting for worms.
I went to Cameroon. And the reason I did so is that I read or found a study published, I think, in 1999 by the World Health Organization, WHO, surveying concentrations of various geohelminths, so that is soil-borne worms that parasitize man, throughout the country of Cameroon. And to my glee, they identified the Anglophone province, whose capital is Limbe, as having a 20% infection rate. So the odds were very good. That meant 1 in 5 people I would meet in that province would likely have hookworm. And it's all in the literature. It's all very easy to find. You have to come in direct bare skin contact with feces-contaminated soil, preferably during the rainy season, and then go and walk barefoot in latrine areas around various villages in 10, 11, 12 days. It was really, really, really hot and really, really humid. It was 100% humidity, and I think on the hottest day I was there, it was something like over 110 Fahrenheit, 114 I believe it got up to.
Must have stunk.
Yeah, I did.
No, I meant being around the latrines.
Oh, yeah, no, that was entirely repulsive. I mean, the first day when it came time to do it, the only reason I followed through was the thought of having to return home and admit that I didn't have the balls to go through with it.
Jasper, you know how most tourists kind of try to avoid unhygienic places when they go to developing country?
I understand that.
And, so you were actively seeking them out?
Well, yeah. I know this sounds eccentric, you know, madman goes to Africa, takes his shoes off and walks around in people's poop. It was a great deal more considered and thoughtful than that.
But still, this is actually quite dangerous. I mean, you can't choose what kind of parasite you're picking up if you're walking around in a latrine.
How many of them are you aware of that can burrow through your skin? If you don't have broken skin on your foot, how are you going to acquire a disease by walking on the ground barefoot?
So
we're really not that vulnerable. People need to understand something. This concept, this idea that human beings are somehow separate from their environment. I mean, you can really think of human beings as the first domesticated animal. Perversely, we domesticated ourselves, and we have progressively alienated ourselves from the environment, created more barriers between us and it, you know, to the point of the absurdity of hand sanitizers and sterilizing gels and toys with antibacterial coatings. I mean, what are really people really afraid of?
Did you get worms?
Well, yes, I did. Yeah, I went home to America. I knew that it would take at least six and preferably 8 for the ova to show up in my stool. And at that time, I still had a modicum of faith in the competence of pathology laboratories. I got 3 negative tests in a row at enormous expense and became very depressed. And then one day I realized my allergies seemed to be gone. Wasn't responding to cats anymore. Asthma hadn't kicked in, and almost invariably did by that time of year. So I deliberately exposed myself to cat stuck my face in a cat. In the past, even indirect exposure to a cat, like putting my hand where a cat had sat, rubbing my cheek or my eye, would have resulted in either a welt or a swollen eye to the point of pain. That didn't happen.
So you decided, these tests are wrong.
I was obviously infected with something, and I really didn't care what it was.
So I really want to know how you know that hookworm is the one that you should have inside you.
I decided I'd just do the test myself, and I was able to identify the embryos, cultivate them, and identify L2 and L3 larvae, which are very distinctive. They're not like any other parasite.
How long do the benefits from having a dose of hookworm last?
So long as you continue to host them, so far as we know. I've been infected since sometime in late January or early February of 2006. I've been allergy and asthma free since April or May of that year. We started providing it to clients in September of 2007.
So are you a worm farmer? Do you grow your own?
I'm a Helminthic therapist. And no, I don't. I hired a PhD who was originally a client to do that.
If you want to buy your worm straight from Jasper, you first need to consult your doctor, answer a questionnaire and sign an agreement, and then he'll send you out a dose. If you thought that dosing yourself with worms as a form of medicine was a bit unconventional or weird, this is where it gets even stranger. I was on an online forum, a chat room for those who want to use worms, and I came across person after person in America planning to do a run to the Canadian border to buy worms. Sort of like cocaine and heroin, hookworms are classed as an illegal drug by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which kind of makes Jasper into a drug dealer.
First of all, they said, we're not sure how to classify this. It's kind of unique. So we're going to think about that. That was on a Tuesday. They came back on Friday, and suddenly no one could look me in the face. And there was an expert in inspecting factories in India that produced pharmacological agents for the United States market. And they had classified it as an investigational new drug, as a pharmaceutical, which was kind of a leap. Yeah, so they decided, they immediately said, you have to stop doing this immediately. You have to surrender your records, your entire client list to us. And we're going to start criminal proceedings. We're gathering in evidence. No way was I going to jail.
Is that why you left?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a choice. I could either be separated, lose my family and everything I possessed and go to jail, or I could lose my family by going abroad and avoiding incarceration. It wasn't a happy day.
Now, you're still running the business from the UK, right? So is it worth it all? How's business?
Well, I didn't start doing this to get rich. There are far easier ways to become wealthy if that's what you're interested in. I did this because the potential benefit for such an enormous range of diseases, multiple sclerosis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, allergy, asthma, really any chronic inflammatory disorder arising out of immune dysregulation has the potential to be helped using benign infectious organisms, helminths being the most important.
In a sentence, Jasper, are you going to have worms forever, for the rest of your life?
Of course I am. I'd be mad not to.
Thanks to a worm-ridden but much, much healthier Jasper Lawrence. Helminthic therapist, fugitive from justice, cowboy, hero, villain, saviour. Other people's words, not mine.
That report from Radio Netherlands, Marnie Chesterton.
That's all the time we have for this week's Health Show. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at healthshow.org. You can explore the archive for any programs you might have missed or would like to hear again. You can also subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org.
Want more? Then follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is letters@healthshow.org.
I'm Bob Barrett.
And I'm Dr. Nina Sachs.
Stay healthy and be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Health Show.
Dr. Nina Sachs is a practicing member of the American College of Gastroenterology. Bob Barrett is producer of The Health Show. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Health Show is a presentation of National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Thank you.